Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So today was our Upasika day, and we spent the afternoon exploring the theme of chana, and that's still fresh in my mind, so I probably won't stray too far from that. I think in terms of meditation, using meditation as a means of establishing mindfulness and in particular, of course, there's many different objects, but using grounding awareness in the body. Of course, I plug this all the time. Bringing attention into the body, having a strong sense of body awareness as we're establishing the meditation. One of the reasons for that is so that there's a strong sense of alertness. The mind is can be so tricky, deceitful that it's helpful to have something that helps to keep it in check, using the mindfulness grounded in the body, I think, is a very helpful tool to support that. It's like Ajahn Chah saying that the mind is a liar and a cheat. So you have to have ways to keep it honest. So that mindfulness of the body helps to keep the mind honest. Otherwise, the mind loves to either drift off into some sort of fantasy or sink into some kind of dullness or escape. When we ground our awareness very solidly in the bodily experience, then that helps to develop that continuity of mindfulness and attention that is so essential. As we use the breath, And to take an interest in the breath as we establish that awareness of the body, and using that the sensation of touch, so that as the breath touches the tip of the nose, as it touches the back of the throat, as it touches the torso, the abdomen, what are we feeling? Are we experiencing that? Are we clear? Is there a continuity of attention and awareness there? As the breath goes out, to have that, especially as we first begin to settle into the meditation, you know, pay attention to the whole body, that feeling of the in the abdomen, torso, throat, tip of the nose, that trackway, that pathway, using the sensation of touch. it's more tangible. And as the say the sharpness of our attention and awareness begins to settle, then you can rest at one particular point, in the sense of say the abdomen or the tip of the nose. And it but when I say resting at a particular point, it's sort of resting in the sense of the attention is gathering at that point, and it's comfortable, it's interested, and there's a certain energy to stay with the that feeling of the breath. Coming in, going out, or just the sensation of movement at that particular point. And try to make it comfortable. And, you know, before doing that, say, focusing in or settling in at one point, yeah, make sure that the body is comfortable. Using the breath, it's like using that breath energy to, again, anchoring awareness and attention in the body, and but using that breath energy to relax the body, settle the body, make the body present for you. This is not a dissociative practice. One's not trying to distance oneself from anything. It's learning how to establish and sustain attention, so that inevitably, of course, there's going to be thoughts and impressions and memories, and you know, I think it was I did a reading of Ajahn Chah's this afternoon, and he made a very explicit sense of. That's just the nature of the mind. That's what the mind does. And we don't have to argue with it. We don't have to fight with it. Just to recognize that's the nature of the mind. There's thoughts. There's going to be some thought. There's going to be some memory. There's going to be associations happening. There's going to be feelings mingling in. What's important is that we allow that attention of the sensation of the breath to stand out with our awareness. Taking an interest, letting that kind of stand out. And then we can whatever comes up, I mean, it just... It's just what it is, in the same way that you know, if we're sitting and meditating in the forest, and you know, there's sounds of the forest in terms of maybe there's a squirrel sort of running through the trees, maybe there's a bird flying, maybe there's a bird call. I mean, if you either get upset and try to keep the animals, trying to keep those all the animals in the forest still so you can meditate, I mean, that's hopeless. Make the mind absolutely still, absolutely unmovable through the force of your will and out of your desire, all you'll do is just make yourself stressed and agitated. But what we can do is direct attention and sustain attention. And when we do that, those other things will fall away. If we place more attention on our breath, on our meditation object, on reflections on Dhamma, if we pay more attention to that, make that more interesting, then the other transient and random thoughts will fall away. The other sense impressions, particularly sound or whatnot, they'll just fall away. You cease to take interest in them. The meditation object kind of stands out. It shines out for one. And as we continue to do that, of course, that's going to come in and go out. It's a process that we have to work with. It's a process. It's practice. We have to practice at doing it. But then it's that lifting up of the object of meditation, lifting up of mindfulness, and then the kind of directing the attention, directing thought, recognizing, evaluating, and then sustaining that attention and the thought processes toward our, say, meditation and Dhamma practice. As we do that, other things will start to fall away. It's not because we're forcing them out of consciousness or forcing the mind onto the meditation object. It's because we're just genuinely interested. You know, it's like, you know, if you're trying to force the mind onto the meditation object is like, you know, forcing a cat to follow your commands, which is hopeless. You know, cats couldn't care less. What humans think, they're going to do what they do. And so on a certain level, you know, our minds are kind of the same. The more you try to force it and put it under your will and your control, it'll just sort of say, you know, well, you think you got control over me? Watch this, you know, and just some weird mood or feeling or just wild energy will just sort of come at you. So that is, but you have to learn how to guide it, though. It's really, you know, this is a practice, it's a training. And, you know, if we can, you know, if we can train, you know, animals to do all sorts of tasks and whatnot, surely we can train our own minds. But it takes a certain skill and gentleness and intelligence how to do it. And so that sense of, you know, lifting up the breath or the meditation object, lifting it up into awareness, investigating it, evaluating it, not in just random discursive, but as quiet as possible, really seeing it from different angles, taking an interest. And then, of course, attention will wander, and then you lift attention again. Lift up that thought of the breath up into the mind. So it's that's where we put our energy. That's where we put our effort. It's the gentle lifting up and sustaining of attention. And the nature of the mind is such that when we take that interest, we take that care, then kind of extraneous things fall away. The extraneous thoughts, extraneous moods fall away, and it feels good. And so I'd say that experience of beauty, of joy, of rapture, it's not something that you have to contrive or force or fantasize that you're doing. It's when the kind of extraneous thoughts and impressions fall away, there's a continuity of our energy and interest. It naturally feels good. It's like when we just like physically with our body, when we exercise. I say, I mean, you can come up with all sorts of excuses of why you don't have to exercise, why you don't have to bother to, say, to do yoga or to do some kind of exercise routine, and resist it and whatnot. But then when you actually do it, even if you've sort of kind of grumbled and complained about it, once you start doing it, oh, well, this feels good. Why don't I do this more often? And it naturally feels good. So in the same way, when we sustain attention, direct attention, take an interest in the meditation object, and the different extraneous thoughts fall away, it feels good. It's a natural result in the mind, in the heart. That quality of joy, of rapture, and pleasure that we experience is really something that sustains the practice. And as that quality of say joy and pleasure, as we experience that more, that's where the mind, the heart really coalesce and there's a gathering together of the internal energies of the mind, and there's a a kind of a one-pointedness, a unification that takes place. It's a natural result of the that application of mindfulness and our effort. So that as we do that, one of the qualities that is an essential feature of the practice is this quality of knowing clearly. As the mind settles, as it becomes more peaceful, the peacefulness doesn't make the mind, say, dull or closed. The appropriate result is that it becomes bright and clear. The quality of knowing, the quality this quality of being the one who knows starts to stand out, becomes more, has more strength, more oomph behind it. That's a good indicator of whether, our practice is, going in the right direction. Is this right practice or not? Is to pay attention to the quality of knowing. When there's a dullness or a feeling of dissociation or of drifting off into something where you don't talk, where the heck was I? What was I experiencing? That's an indication of a misapplication of the practice. That's one of the most clear indicators of are we on track in the practice is when this quality of knowing becomes clear and strong. And of course, this is what say Ajahn Chah and all the great forest masters would always pointing back to this being the one who knows, taking the Buddha as refuge, and having that quality of awakening as an integral part of the experience. Being the one who knows, being the one who's awake, being the one who is bright and clear. Those are the epithets of the translation of the word Buddha. And this is what we take as refuge. And it's what our practice should be nurturing and supporting. And so that's when that clarity and the whole purpose of of developing peaceful and still, stable states of mind is that we can see things clearly. Seeing what are the causes of suffering? What are the causes of happiness? What's the nature of the world around us? What's the nature of our own mind? Understanding those principles in the commentarial tradition, they point to two different kinds of jhana or of practice, peaceful states of mind. And one is the a jhana based on an object, in the sense of the mind becomes very peaceful, it becomes very settled, and there's a clarity that's there. But there's also, say a jhana based on the taking the characteristics or the nature of things as an object. And that's where insight comes from. There's a strength of mind that's built up by taking an object as the basis of attention. But it's paying attention to the characteristics of things, seeing the patterns of impermanence, seeing the patterns of dukkha, seeing the characteristic or the reality of not self, of anatta, as a pattern, as a characteristic. And as we take that as an object, then there's a natural inclination to one seeing through the nature of things, and then there's a natural inclination to relinquishment, to letting go, and that's quality of of dispassion that lends itself to relinquishment and peace. And, and that's the kind of peace that we can carry with us. Sometimes when we can make the mind peaceful through concentration, that's a helpful tool, but oftentimes it's dependent on conditions and both external conditions, internal conditions. But when we can see things clearly and see these patterns in nature, that leads to an insight into truth that we can carry with us. That's something that doesn't, we don't lose it, it's unshakable. And this is, the Buddha is pointing us to the possibility that we have of experiencing an unshakable peace. We rely on different experiences of peace in order to nurture and to nourish our well-being, our stability. But it's that clear seeing that allows the mind to really penetrate and to truly let go of that which is causing us stress, causing us suffering, causing us discontent and dissatisfaction. And that's the kind of unshakable peace that it's possible for us. And it's what the Buddha says is possible for anybody who's follows the path. The path of practice is there. The tools have been given to us. Sort of, it's up to us to just do it. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening. Mm-hmm.